When we're hiring somebody, we are convinced this is the best person in the world. They are awesome. I'm hiring whoever this is in front of me. 3 or 4 or 5 years later, we look around the office and go, who are all these morons I'm working with? Who hired these people? We hired them, right? Because we trusted our gut. And it feels good to trust your gut. It's instinctual. It feels right, but it's so wrong.
You know that whole thing about hiring the best person for the job? Turns out it's not that easy. As Laszlo Bock from Google points out, there are just all kinds of obstacles.
Job descriptions aren't that helpful. You know, they're sort of ghostwritten by lawyers. There's things you can and can't say. And they don't actually tell you what's going to be successful in the job, right? If they say you're a marketing analyst or a banker, there's all kinds of different ways to do those jobs. And then you compound that because people doing the interviewing, the hiring managers, they don't know how to interview either. Most of us aren't very good at interviewing. So that's broken. And then on the job seeker side, resumes don't really tell you a lot about yourself because what you see in the resume isn't the whole person.
So how do you find out whether a job or a workplace is right for you? And how do employers improve their strike rate? That's what I want you and me to find out on this episode of Work Life. I'm Scott Spark, and a little later on you'll hear more from Laszlo Bock. He's responsible for attracting and keeping staff at the company that's often singled out as the best place to work. After a decade of growing Google from 6,000 to 60,000 employees, he has quite a bit to say about how to improve the way we hire people. But first, here's something you never want to happen when you apply for a job.
I once knew a woman who had a PhD in English, couldn't obtain alternative employment at the time. She was recruited into a base admin job. I guess in fairness, they thought, well, we can't discriminate against you because you've got a PhD. One of the reasons that she accepted the job, though, was that they said to her, look, there is a real capacity for you to make a difference here. You know, we would love you to innovate and do some other things. In her first week of employment, she tried to change the systeming of numbering of the internal pigeonholes, and they refused to let her do it and weren't prepared to engage in any dialogue about it. She left, of course. So they thought they wanted somebody who was innovative, creative, and social, but actually they wanted somebody who didn't talk to people, who just went in and stuck the mail in boxes. Hi, I'm Kerry Spooner, and I am currently Dean of Higher Education at the Wentworth Institute here in Sydney.
Dr. Kerry Spooner is a real straight shooter. She's spent a lifetime researching, teaching, and consulting in human resource management. She says when you apply for a job, do your homework, ask questions, and find out what you're really getting yourself into.
Individuals need to be asking, you know, how will I be valued? How will I be seen?
Is that a bit, I don't know, ballsy in a way?
It's very. And so they don't. Because most people who are going for that job, they want that job. They might even really need that job. So the last thing they're going to do is say, will I be valued? What are my staff development opportunities here? What am I going to look like if I work here for 3 or 5 or 10 years? Am I going to have a future working life?
And there's another good reason to be inquisitive. I hate to break it to you, but Dr. Kerry Spooner says not all workplaces actually want the best person for the job.
Not everyone's necessarily motivated by what we might call higher values. We could be motivated, for example, by lower values. I might actually want to recruit somebody who I think isn't going to shine. I might actually want somebody who's going to clean up after me. I might want somebody who's going to make me look good. And the reality is that to some extent, most people want a bit of that. Somewhere playing into the recruitment process is this idea about, well, this is what I need in my job and this is what will help me do my job better. Okay, now that may be overt or covert, but I think an element of that is there.
And the problems with hiring don't end there. Even when a workplace does have laudable intentions and is honestly trying to hire the best person for the job, their methods aren't so great.
A lot of the recruitment process takes place via interviews, although we know that interviews are very poor indicators of how people are actually going to perform. Most organisations aren't prepared to invest the time and the resources into doing multiple interviews, etc. Now, if I could just give you an example of the importance of that. If you think about where an individual works in an organisation, they'll work with a colleague, they'll work with a group, they'll work with the department, they'll work with the overall organisation. So, in fact, we really should be assessing fit within all of those groups. We're going to have one representative from the workplace, one representative from the department, and in what, a 30-minute interview, they're going to all be able to assess fit effectively. Not very likely, is it?
How is fit often assessed?
Well, it depends what you're assessing. But if you're assessing technical talent, for example, we might just get the person to type. We might ask the person to tell us how they would deal with a particular problem. Or we might ask them to present some work. It's relatively easy to assess the technical skills now based on what they've done before, assuming that what they've done before is what they're going to do into the future, and indeed what they've done before is going to be what you want into the future.
You're making it sound very hard to hire people.
Well, it makes it very easy to get it wrong.
How hard is it to hire the best person for a job?
I think it's very difficult. I think it's very difficult to hire the best person for the job, and it takes time and it takes resources, and it really takes, you know, very serious analysis of the organisation, where the gaps are now, where the organisation's going into the future, proper mapping of its external environment, very carefully identifying what are those critical factors that you're looking for, and then looking at developing meaningful ways of measuring them. You might look at multiple interviews, and of course, these days, at the very least, you will have a trial period of employment.
Before we get to Laszlo Bock, let's check out how hiring is done at a young Australian business that's all about improving interactions. Meld Studios use design in a bunch of interesting ways, like helping the State Library of Victoria rebuild itself for the future. Meld employs around 30 people, including Principal Nova Franklin.
I think you always have to start with knowing who you want, and that means understanding the job that needs to be done, but also the person that can best do that job. Then we go, well, who do we know? Who could do this? We don't pinch anybody, but we're looking for people who are maybe between contracts or whose contracts are running out. Then we advertise, we go out to the market. So we might tweet something, we might use LinkedIn, we might use a service design network. We get a whole lot of resumes back, resumes and portfolios. Portfolios are much easier for us to get through and understand people's skills because it's the work they've done rather than a description of, usually.
And there's something beautifully simple about the work you do in the sense that it's improving people's experience of the world. But it is a newer field. I wonder if there's a challenge there in articulating what the job is and what skills you're looking for.
It's easy to articulate the skills, but people may not see themselves in them. So, for example, if I'd have seen an ad for a principal at Meld, I probably would never have applied, particularly if the ad was for a service designer or an experience designer. I wouldn't think that that's what I do, but it's exactly what I do. It's about helping people to understand what we do, and we use a lot of stories and use a lot of examples.
Once you have a shortlist of people, what happens then?
So one of the things we do is we invite them to come in and just meet us at our first Friday of the month drinks. And so many of us will be here then, maybe there's 20 of us here, and we have a drink and we're like, hi, I'm Nova, who are you and where do you come from and what do you like? And we'll talk about everything. And that really helps just to see if the person's a good cultural fit. And it also helps them because we want them to walk away knowing what we do and understanding. So they can ask 1,000 questions.
Is that sort of like the interview without them really knowing?
No, it's the beginning. It's just the beginning, yeah. It's just one bit of data you can use to screen. And it's a nice way of introducing people to the whole team and making the team involved in the recruiting because they have to live with our decisions. So we want them to be involved.
You said you use that opportunity to see if they're a good cultural fit. What does that mean?
That means that they're going to be interested and interesting, that they're passionate about what they do, that they're resilient. A lot of what we do is messing with the unknown. When you don't know the answer, for some people that can be really, really difficult. It means that they are rigorous probably in the work that they do, and they're a real people person. after that, we get them in and we'll normally have one of the senior people here just chat to them. So the way we do our research and the way we do our interviews is we'll just start with some topic areas that are of interest and we sort of mosey through them together in no particular order in a way that makes perfect sense to the person.
What are the most crucial questions, the most telling questions in an interview, do you reckon?
I like to ask what they know about you. If they haven't bothered doing any research on your company, they're probably not going to be very proactive and they're probably not going to be very rigorous. And that's also a great introduction to a conversation because they won't know everything about us. I like to ask them what they loved or hated about their last job. I want to find out about what they love and what they don't like doing. And then in my own mind, I can translate that to what they'll be doing here. So if there's certain things that they avoid, but they're things that we need to do all the time and that are critical to our job here, then that's very telling for us. I also like to know if they're a manager, tell me about an employee that you got on really well with or that you really struggled with. It's hard to make that stuff up. You usually get a very good sense of whether a person is a good manager by finding out what they've struggled with. You know, there are a lot of people who are very difficult to manage. It's not that, it's the approach that you would take.
What are some of the common mistakes that applicants make during the hiring process and particularly in the interview, because that's particularly a crucial moment?
So I think it's only applying for a job that you think you're 100% qualified for.
That's a mistake?
I think that's a massive mistake. I think that if you really want to love your job and grow and be of good value to the organisation, you should perhaps have about 70% of the skills. If I meet someone who's 100% ready for that job, I won't hire them because I think they're going to be bored in 3 months. Why will they want the job after 3 months? Not turning up on time is obviously a mistake. Turning up too early tells me that the person doesn't have very high resilience, that they can't wait at the door. So if I turn up early for a job interview, I'll just walk around the block. Not asking any questions, I think, is a big mistake.
And why is that?
Asking questions shows that you're really thinking about yourself in that job. It shows that you're curious and it shows that you want to learn more. If you come in without asking any questions, it makes me wonder if you really do want the job or if you're passionate at all.
And what's a good question to ask?
What are you trying to achieve overall? What are the traits of some of the best people here? Or what is it about the best people here that helps them to be successful? Yeah. I think tell me more about your company and what you do, what you're trying to achieve.
Is there a degree to which hiring people, as much as you can build in all of these processes and checks and balances, that there is a degree of guesswork? I mean, is that a fair word to use?
I would say that it's a lottery. It's a lottery with higher odds than Tats Lotto, much, much higher odds. But sometimes you're going to get someone who can't do the job. We try and minimise that by doing reference checks or once we even looked at somebody's performance appraisals. And I love that. I want to do more of that.
Now that you know what you do as an employer, is there anything that you wish that you'd known going for jobs in the past?
I think it's something about the pay. I'm always really limp-wristed when it comes to, you know, asking for a raise from my last job. But I think most employers are probably prepared to pay a bit more than you've actually come from. I find that tricky myself, but yeah, be brave.
Be brave. And here's one final bit of advice from Nova Franklin.
Be yourself. Take the job you really want. And know that if you're yourself and that organisation thinks you're too crazy or too conservative or whatever it is they're thinking, then that's probably not the right organisation for you and you're likely to have a much better time somewhere where you do fit in.
I'm Scott Spark. You're listening to Work Life, where we talk about your life at work and how to make it better.
My name's Laszlo Bach. I'm the Senior Vice President of what we call People Operations at Google. And I've been here for just about 10 years, and my mission is to make work suck less.
Laszlo Bach describes the collection of jobs he's had as a guidance counsellor's nightmare. It's also just really impressive. Before being responsible for who works at Google, he was a waiter, held various roles at startups and nonprofits, was a consultant at McKinsey, served in executive roles at General Electric, and somewhere in there, he was an actor who ran in slow-mo as a lifeguard on Baywatch. He recently had an epiphany. We spend more time working than doing anything else, and everybody deserves meaningful work. So he took everything he's learnt and wrote a book. Work Rules: Insights from Inside Google to Transform How You Live and Lead. One lesson is that job interviews are only useful if they're standardised. That's why at Google they ask the same thing of all applicants and apply the same evaluation methods time and time again.
We make sure our interviewers are trained on a certain style of interviewing called structured interviewing. You ask a consistent set of questions that are tied to what the job actually requires, and you ask those same questions to all the candidates. And what that means is you get a more objective, unbiased read on the person's capabilities. It's an absolute error to rely on your first impressions. It's really important to set aside those first impressions. It's why, for example, in our interview process, we do things like you write extensive notes about the conversation you had. Here's the question I asked related to this attribute. Here's the answer they gave, and here's my assessment. Then those notes go to a separate hiring committee, and they review it. And the idea there is, if I'm interviewing you, there's a lot of things going on that could bias the outcome, not just around do I think you're good and bad, but around gender and sexual orientation and race and ethnicity and religion. You want to just get it down to the words and then have an objective other person look at it and say, absent all those other signals, was Laszlo a good person or somebody we should hire or not?
And crucially, whoever is doing the interviewing cannot make the final hiring decision.
Somebody comes in and interviews, and they meet a panel of interviewers, typically four people. Usually a couple people who would be subordinate to them, a peer or a manager, and often will have somebody from a different department interview them. All that gets written up, goes to the separate hiring committee. And nobody who is going to be working with that person or the hiring manager sits on that hiring committee. The hiring committee's only job is to make sure quality remains high for every single hire. Because the problem is if you're a hiring manager, you know, imagine you're hiring a secretary or an administrative assistant. When you start looking for one, you want quality. But 6 months later, you will settle for anyone who will answer the phone or help you with email or get your coffee, whatever. You compromise. But by removing the hiring manager from that decision-making process, by giving it to this other group, this committee, you actually don't compromise and you end up with better hiring, which then in turn gives you a higher performing company over time.
Okay, so when you sit down for an interview with Google, here is what they are trying to discover.
So there's four big things we look for. The first one is what we call general cognitive ability. So how bright you are, how well you learn. The number two best way to predict how someone is going to perform in a job, any job, is to test their general cognitive ability. The best way is actually to have them do the job, to give them a work sample. But for a lot of knowledge work, you can't really do that. So we test for general cognitive ability. And then we come up with questions like the one I gave you. Give me an example of a difficult problem you solved. Give me an example of when you had to take something that was small and grow it tremendously. The second thing we look for is leadership. And when we talk about leadership at Google, it's not traditional, I was president of the chess club or captain of the football team. It's what we call emergent leadership, which is, do you emerge as a leader when the situation requires it? So when there's a problem, do you step in, help fix it? And then just as importantly, do you let go and let someone else take control? The third thing is googliness. So do you fit the culture? Specifically, what we look for, though, is not, are you like everybody else at the company? A lot of companies say, well, cultural fit is, are you like me? For us, cultural fit is about two attributes. And again, there's questions underpinning this. But one is conscientiousness. So when you see a problem, do you feel like an owner, like it's your problem to fix, or do you walk away and say it's somebody else's? And the second is intellectual humility. We have people with tremendous egos, but intellectual humility means when you're presented with new facts, you reconsider your opinions.
And how do you assess intellectual humility?
There's two big ways. One is, again, you just ask for examples, like give me an example of a time when you were wrong. Or when you were convinced you were right and how you dealt with it when you got new information. The second is, you know, sometimes you'll get into actual pretty technical conversations about a subject area that you know about that they know about. So if I'm hiring someone in people operations, I may ask them about sort of, you know, tax treatment of stock options. And they may have a perspective and I'll introduce new facts and we'll debate back and forth. And if the facts throw them off balance, how they respond to that and how they react and do they incorporate that into their thinking is really critical.
I understand you also screen for gratitude in job applicants. Why gratitude?
Well, what we've seen is that people who have an innate tendency to be grateful are just happier longer. And they seem to be slightly more productive. So this isn't one of the big four things. The big four things are the cognitive ability, emergent leadership, googliness, and then we actually look for expertise. It's the least important thing, but can you do the job we're hiring you to do? But that's the least important. But what's interesting is we've done this research about how happy people are at Google, and every year we do an employee survey like a lot of places do. And we found that on average, people, they start thrilled to be here and they get 1% less happy every year. And after about 10 years, they go from 100% to 90% happy, except for people who have an innate sense of gratitude, of appreciation for the world, and they never get less happy. So the more you can find people like that, the kind of happier environment you're in, and it feels good all around.
And there's stuff that used to help you get a job at Google, but no longer does, like where you went to school or university and your grades.
I mean, there's certainly brilliant people who went to the top schools. Everyone should try to hire those people. But in the US, for example, only about 30% of people complete college. And the other two-thirds, it's not because they're stupid or lazy or bad workers. It's because maybe they didn't grow up in a household where other people went to college. Maybe their parents couldn't afford it. Maybe they couldn't. Maybe their peer group didn't go. Maybe they were from a rural area, right? And they just didn't have that access. And we were missing out on a whole bunch of talented people by just focusing on a few elite schools. The second thing that we found was that when we did the math on, is there any relationship between going to Harvard or Stanford or MIT and getting straight A's and how you perform, we found there actually isn't. Your grades are a little predictive for your first couple years of your career, but after that, they don't predict anything, which intuitively makes sense. You know, how I did in school 20 years ago has very little to do with how I'm doing my job today. But when we're hiring people, again, because we're biased and we're not rational, we look for fancy credentials and say, oh, the person must be good, when in fact, you know, again, two-thirds of people don't have that opportunity, and they're just as good.
The other thing that no longer matters to Google is whether you can figure out how many golf balls would fit inside a 747, or if you were shrunk to the size of a pencil and dropped in a blender, how would you escape? Brain teasers like this, they're out.
The main thing those brain teasers do is they make the interviewer feel smart and the interviewee feel stupid. They're all kind of trick questions in a way, because there's an underlying methodology, right? Like figure out how big the box is, the airplane is, or, you know, how many gas stations in Sydney or whatever, right? And you basically guess at how big it is. And then you say, you make a bunch of assumptions about, well, you know, if the airplane is, you know, has these dimensions, then I'm going to make some guesses about a golf ball. And then you solve for how many golf balls. So you get a sense for how well somebody can do math on the fly. But that doesn't tell you how well they're going to do the job. It's like a party trick. It's just practice. It doesn't reveal how you're going to do on the job.
There's one other thing that Laszlo Bock says about Google's approach to people and jobs, and it's about hiring for the person more than the specific role.
If you're a bright, capable person who can learn, we'll hire you. We'll figure out the job later. There's this thesis we have that basically says if you just hire sort of a smart generalist who may not know that specific job, 9 times out of 10, they'll come up with the same solution an expert will, and maybe 5% of the time, they'll come up with something that the world has never seen. And it'll be amazing. And 5% of the time, they'll screw up and we'll need to fix it and learn and all that. But that extra 5% where they do something amazing and mind-blowing because they just approach it with sort of a newborn's eyes is really powerful. But to do that, you have to believe that more important than hiring for the job is hiring people who can do lots of great things.
So you might be thinking, righto, Laszlo, great advice, but how do I, mere non-Google mortal, employ this wisdom? Well, he has a tip for that too.
Look for the fertile ground. Find a place where you can do something small and run an experiment and maybe change the way you hire, or maybe give people more freedom, or let people design their own jobs, or let people decide when to come into work. But measure it and say, you know, on January 1st, we started doing it this way, and here's another group that didn't. And then 6 months from now, see how the groups are doing. You actually then create a data set where you can then go to management and say, like, well, actually, we tried this and, you know, it really worked in this city or for this team. And we compared it to this other team, and the team where we tried this worked really well. So look for those little opportunities and build from there.
So if you're applying for a job, be brave, be yourself, ask questions. If you're an employer, standardize and structure those job interviews, eliminate bias, and look for what really matters. With any luck, it'll be a match made in heaven. I'm Scott Spark. This is Work Life. Track me down on Twitter or via the RN website. abc.net.au/rn. If you've enjoyed listening, share Work Life with your friends. Who knows? In the words of Laszlo Bock, we just might make work suck less.